Graham, you're twiddling with a knob over there. Is that Audacity you're using to?
Well, yeah, the Audacity input for your voice is always overloaded by your charisma. So I just have to turn it down slightly at the beginning.
Oh, wow, so that was what Gary did wrong last time. He turned my awesomeness down. It's too much.
I still think it shone through.
Thanks. Thanks, Graham. That's a really positive comment about last podcast. And in keeping with the overwhelming wave of positivity that we've received.
Yeah.
For everybody, apart from Effie.
Yeah, no, I'm right.
It's nice to know that 35 of our many thousand listeners are still alive.
In fairness, that was...
Not for long.
Or at least not awake.
So, Ben, stop splashing. Stop tapping. Don't shuffle any papers. He's got his hands in his armpits, listeners. And that must mean that it's time to start podcast Linux Tux Radar podcast series 4 episode 16. Hooray!
Awesome.
I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Efrain Hernandez.
I'm Graham Morrison.
I'm Ben Efrard.
And we don't have a John Robson anymore. But we do have news, discoveries of the week, ransom rave, speak your brains. Do we have any speak your brains?
Yes.
We have speak your brains. An open ballot, and maybe, just maybe, there'll be one last thing. You can subscribe to the magazine, which we also produce. That's called Linux Format, at tinyurl.com/LXFOffer1. What's going to be in this issue? It was something quite cool. That bloke with the glasses.
Yeah, he's speaking today at LinuxCon.
We did an interview with him. He was talking about penguins.
Yeah, and MacBook Airs, which he liked.
Oh, that must be Linus Torvalds. Yes.
I thought it was Buddy Holly.
If we could get an interview with Buddy Holly,
that'd be great.
That would be awesome.
Would you want?
If I had the power to get an interview with Buddy Holly, I wouldn't get an interview with Buddy Holly. I would use it for some of the some of the darker reason. But anyway, so we've got a feature. We've got an interview with Linus Torvalds, and that's we speak to him exclusively. It's a worldwide exclusive,
and it's a great issue, even if you don't like Linus Torvalds.
If you don't like Linus Torvalds, please leave a comment under the line. But let's move on and let's crack on with news. Ben.
Okay, so obviously the big news this week has been the Samsung versus Apple, Apple versus Samsung court case, and it turns out Samsung have copied everything. Basically.
It's amazing. These people didn't grow up in whitewashed rooms without any doors.
No.
Like a David Bowie video.
Yeah, so in case you're not aware, the court case is between Apple and Samsung. Apple have accused Samsung of copying a couple of technical features, but more of the designs from the iPhone and the iPad in their products. The two technical features have a bounce back. So when you're scrolling through, say, a website and you get to the bottom, you can pull it past, and when you release, it pops back. That's the bounce back patent. And the other one is the pinch to zoom. I'm sure you know what those are if you use a smartphone. Most of the patents were design patents, which is where Apple submit basically drawings of their products to the patent office. And then they've said, look, these Samsung ones look a bit too much like our ones. And a lot of the contention in those ones have come down to whether or not it's form or function. Because in a design patent, you can only patent stuff that's explicitly not functional. So, for example, a lot of people are arguing the classic rounded corners of the iPhone isn't patentable because if they had sharp corners, it'd poke you in the pocket. So it's functional. And the same with the gap between the screen and the edge of the phone. It's functional, so a lot of people argue that it shouldn't be patentable. However, the jury disagreed and slapped Samsung with $1 billion, although failed to add up exactly how much.
It's incredible. It's remarkable. It's the epitome of all the patent disputes that have been going on for the last few years. This is the orgasm of the patent orgy. It's just amazing that you can, it's there to protect innovation, and it's there to protect, patents are there to protect people investing a lot of time and effort and money into creating something. And if it's a rounded corner on a rectangular device, I just don't see how that is protecting anything or anyone or helping innovation at all, as most sensible people seem to think too.
Yeah, I mean, it's been basically thrown out of, what, about 4 or 5 countries now?
Yes, yeah.
In Korea, they both got a bit of a slap on the wrist, but basically nothing. Mm-hmm. In the UK, a judge told Apple to stop being so silly.
Yeah, yeah.
In Germany, it's going nowhere.
What you're saying is that court case is not really going to really continue in this country?
No, I mean, the judge basically said they're obviously different devices. No one's getting confused. Told Apple to shut up and go away.
I mean, just imagine a world where Apple is the only smartphone vendor.
It's just ludicrous.
Why was it different this time with the trial being held in California?
Yeah. What's so close to Apple's headquarters?
What was it, 10 miles from Cupertino? Mm. Why did the judge not say, maybe, you're being silly?
Maybe the problem here was before Apple's lawyers had a jet lag. Because that's a fly.
You hit the microphone there, Ben. That's going to make a really bad bang.
God. You've been so careful today. Gee.
Try not to get so excited.
But doesn't this open an argument for any sort of artifact, object, or whatever to sue another manufacturer, such as, I don't know, the car industry? Ford is going to sue, I don't know, Renault for having 4 wheels on their cars. Or because the cars roll, or because the wheels are round, or something absolutely ridiculous like that.
But actually, the legal procedure in America is changing in the middle of September, whereby from that point on, defendants can choose whether or not to go to a trial by jury or a trial by industry experts.
Right, that makes sense, because that leads us onto the open ballot.
Yeah,
I did think it was interesting, and what you were saying earlier on in the week about the various prior art examples that weren't able to be submitted in the case.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it does sound a little bit like Samsung's lawyers dropped the ball a few times in this case. And one of them was not submitting their prior art evidence early enough for it to be considered. Perhaps they're just tired of having to defend themselves constantly around
like Lance
the world.
Armstrong.
Yeah.
Samsung is like Lance Armstrong. The thing, what was the jury foreman in some interview, I heard him saying that examples of prior art couldn't be prior art because they ran on a different processor.
Yeah, this...
That sounds crazy talk.
Well, it is crazy talk and doesn't match at all with the law. And it's a little bit confusing exactly what he says, and it's only come out recently, so he hasn't defended it or justified it, and Samsung haven't pulled it up in court. So it's not entirely clear exactly what he means, but from what it sounds like, yeah, he's completely misinterpreted the entire notion of prior art.
Isn't the judge's job there to guide the jury and things like that?
It should be, but the jury didn't ask.
The jury shouldn't have to ask.
Well, yeah, but when they got to deliberation, the foreman of the jury stood up and said, "I know about patents, this is what prior art is." The rest of the jury went, "Oh, okay," and they did it on that definition of prior art. The jury instructions did contain a fairly detailed and accurate description of what prior art is, and they didn't use that.
I'm imagining a remake of 12 Angry Men, where at the start, Henry Fonda stands up and goes, "Oh, I killed someone once, I know about murder. Nah, this isn't it." Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, we probably should point out as well that the foreman who did this does hold a patent himself. He has patented a device for recording broadcasted TV and playing it at a later date.
Wow, he's going to make a shedload of money off the Sky.
What's amazing is no one had thought of that before 2002 when he patented it.
That is incredible.
Yeah.
What a clever guy.
I mean, I thought there were I thought I had a device before then that did that, but apparently I didn't.
No, you didn't.
No. And moving on. Got a bit bogged down in that.
See where
one.
It says lightning news?
It doesn't say lightning news.
We're getting bogged down in news. We need to cut to the chase and get onto one last thing.
You've got
thing.
To maintain the quality, otherwise we're just going to get fried.
So, moving on.
Sorry, Ben.
Second big item of news is Mageia is now number 2 in DistroWatch's 6-month rankings. Now, a lot of people do question the accuracy of DistroWatch's rankings.
Yeah, yeah.
And they aren't based in any way on the actual number of people using them, but on the amount of times people go to their DistroWatch links for them.
It's still great news. It's fantastic that a distribution that was so close to death and is still close to death in some quarters has been able to live on. I mean, it's got such a warm place in my heart.
Yeah, I mean, what surprises me is it's Mageia that's gone past Ubuntu. I'd have thought there are other... I don't particularly like Mageia myself. I think there are other distributions that does its role better, but that's just a personal thing. I'm a little bit...
All of our opinions here are personal.
Yeah.
They're not our company's policy line or at all or anything. And they're not lawyers either.
No. But this does... this is a result of... Yeah.
So, Mageia, what's the number one in DistroWatch's 6-month rankings? Is that still Mint?
Still Mint. And Mageia's moved up by number 2 by them getting more hits rather than Ubuntu dropping down.
Right. That's good.
It is good.
A sign that the ecosystem is growing and that the pie is getting bigger.
Yeah, it's also, I was going to say, it's a sign that Unity is losing favour, but obviously I just contradicted that a sentence ago.
Cool.
And, yeah, moving swiftly on now. Twitter's joined the Linux Foundation.
Good.
Good.
Good. Good for Twitter. Great. Marvellous. Yeah.
There was
hang on, what does that mean? That's a good question, actually. What does it mean?
Yeah. I don't know. Twitter,
it's a PR move.
Gives money towards paying people to work on Linux in recognition of the amount of the contribution that Linux makes towards Twitter's business and gains PR, and uses this to try and dissuade people from going to Identica, which is a lot more free software friendly.
I haven't heard anyone mention Identica for a long time.
Not for ages. Not since Paul used to shout at us to put links to Tux Radar stuff on Identica.
And we've still got the followers on Identica link in the podcast. And unfortunately, I haven't updated it for a long time.
Yeah, I actually went into the Identica link yesterday on the podcast purely by chance. And it hasn't been updated in about 10 months.
Yeah. Wow. Sorry, guys. If you want us to do it, I'll do it. So let us know.
So that's what it means that they've joined the Linux Foundation. Okay.
Thank you very much.
And, yeah, Robert Rosario has removed some code after alleged GPL abuses. His code is for the Mayer document management system. And I actually just popped back to the link on it today, and he appears to have taken down the list of software that he claims is infringing.
Hmm.
Yesterday there was a link of 3 document management systems.
Right.
And now it says... And the list of violators, none. I don't know if this is in response to legal challenges or if he's had a change of heart or if it's just something that's happened. I don't know. But he's taken down only the development lines of source code. The actual production code is still there, so you can still download it and use it, should you wish to.
Hmm.
Any comments on that?
I think these things happen occasionally. I can understand when people put a lot of effort into something and they feel like they're being ripped off, but mostly it's the terms of the GPL, unless they're actually, you know, making adjustments and selling it and not releasing their changes. So I don't know whether that's happening or not in this case, but if it isn't happening, then sadly that's just what the GPL is.
Yeah, he has accused them of not releasing their changes and charging too much.
Right.
And obviously charging too much isn't... restricted
under
the GPL.
And not releasing the changes is important.
Yeah.
And yeah, the community should help. It's good that he's getting publicity.
Yeah. Yeah, especially as very few GPL abuses actually come out in public. There's a huge number that go on, and most of them are just swept under the carpet because license holders don't want to get embroiled in court cases or whatever.
It's expensive.
A lot of GPL contributors are contractors, and it reflects badly on them.
Yeah.
Looking for work. And the next item of news, Miguel de Casa has released quite a lengthy post on why he believes OS X has killed the Linux desktop. Basically, I had a quick read of it. It appears that He thinks that it's to do with compatibility and constant changing and breaking old things.
Yeah.
And the thing that really highlighted it for him was the audio, which I know is a personal bugbearer of yours, Graham.
Yeah, I read the post as well, and I kind of agree with quite a bit. I don't agree with his conclusion that OS X is the answer. But what I've printed it out, actually. One of the things he said was that desktop developers followed the example set by kernel developers, but the desktop developers didn't have the same influence that the kernel developers did to ensure that there was the same quality and the same refinement in what was produced, because it's much more objective if you're working with kernel development. He says at the very end, we missed the big picture. We alienated every third-party developer in the process. The ecosystem that has sprung to life with Apple's OS X App Store is just impossible to achieve in the next today. And I kind of agree with him. I mean, this is I think this is the point that we were trying to get when we started the interview with Dennis Torvalds, not trying to embed an advert into there. But this idea that there are too many cooks almost, and we need to kind of rationalize if we're going to compete. So I kind of agree with him. I don't agree with him that OS X is the answer. But I think he's explaining why so many geeks jumped to OS X. And I think it's an important discussion.
Yeah.
That's it.
I don't agree that the Linux desktop is dead.
No.
I used it mere minutes ago.
It's thriving. And also, I love, even though they haven't been that successful, we're talking about the Samsung and Apple case, where there are massive similarities. On the Linux desktop space, there's so much innovation. People are trying lots of different things. They're not just copying OS X, and that's brilliant.
I personally feel that Linux desktop will probably never be huge, probably not even as big as Apple is now. And that's purely because there is this innovation there. It does change quickly, and a lot of people don't want that change quickly, which is fine. I mean, that's their personal choice. But what the Linux desktop does do well is this innovation, which is alienating people.
Yeah.
But at the same time, provides a really good environment for people who want it.
Yeah.
People like the scientists at CERN.
Ah, yes. Mm. Yes, Linux.
Yes. We should write some words. We should speak to somebody at CERN and find out what they're doing with their Linux.
And we have, dear listeners. But that's another story.
Okay. So moving on to the final piece of news, Firefox continues its relentless march to the highest possible version number, with version 15 released yesterday.
Excellent.
So, discovery of the week.
Oh, discoveries, yes. My favourite part of the podcast. You know something? I've discovered an audio-related thing. just because I thought I'd wind up some people. But I'll start as I've started talking about it. I did a review for the last issue of AV Linux, and I was surprised at just how awesome AV Linux is. It's the final AV Linux that will ever be. It's AV Linux 6. And it's a distribution, as you can tell from its name, that is a bundle of audiovisual packages and configurations, mostly on the audio side. And if you have any interest in audio, it's the thing to use if you want to see what's happening in the Linux audio space, because it's crammed full of amazing stuff. Hundreds of plugins which you'd normally have to gather from all kinds of different repositories and build yourself and install into lots of different locations. Lots of synths, lots of apps. It's got beta versions of Arda 3 with MIDI and with VST. It's got some stuff that I've never seen as binaries before. For example, there's the Carla plugin host, which is a fantastic tool if you just want to play synths or make effects or create a guitar effects rack. Guitarix is an amp and effects simulation plugin I've never seen before. I saw it bundled in AV Linux. And this is a distribution that you just realize how much software there is and how brilliant Linux is doing in, you know, these small sub-genres that nobody cares about except for me. That's it. Anyone else want to have a go?
I was really happy to find out that HTC is releasing rolling the upgrade to Ice Cream Sandwich on some of the models. And as it happened, my phone is part of that list, the HTC Desire S, supposed to receive the Ice Cream Sandwich upgrade by the end of August. But I discovered that everything depends of your network provider. My network provider is Orange, and they decided that I won't get an upgrade until 1 month before my contract finishes. And my contract finishes in May next year. So I became an upgrade in April.
Why?
Just because they can't do it, because they're the ones that
roll out. So it's
a
coincidence that it was going to be 1 month before you, at the end of your...
No, it isn't. That's how their policy. That's how they decided. That's their policy. So I rang HTC yesterday, and they said, well, just... I mean, probably some of the carriers, they take 45 days to roll up the upgrades. Not all the models are going to be upgraded, so just the ones on the list. And so probably just by September, sir, you will have your phone upgrade to Ice Cream Sandwich. And I went, oh, that's great. So I go and check it out in one of the Orange outlets here in Bath. So I did. And they went, yeah, you're going to be upgraded. We can check the list when the day when you're going to be upgraded. And they basically gave me the news. But even worse, it was not just the fact that it's 1 month before your contract finishes, but it's also that because I'm still so far away from finishing my contract, they offered me an early upgrade, which meant I had to pay the remaining months of my contract in order to get, well, they will give me like 25% discount or something like that. But I will get my phone upgrade to Ice Cream Sandwich.
What, just for the Ice Cream Sandwich upgrade?
Yeah, that's
what they call upgrade.
Early upgrade. So you have to pay the remaining months of, I mean, like I was saying to Andrew, if your contract finishes, I don't know, next month, but then you're happy because you're getting your upgrade straight away, but not in my case. So it's like I have to wait almost half a year just to get
phone.
Or ruin my phone, which would be illegal. I can't do it.
But it's not illegal.
Well, but I will lose all my benefits that I get from Orange.
So just to clarify, this isn't a hardware upgrade you want. This is just
just software upgrade. Just Ice Cream Sandwich. I will keep happily my existing phone, and I will just go on a better contract after that, because it's absolute rubbish. It's just
It's probably worth looking into it if you want it that much, because even with its rooted, Orange won't care or know. It won't mess up things with Orange.
Well, what I'm talking about the discrepancy between the release of Ice Cream Sandwich by HTC and the promise of everyone is going to be upgraded,
and then an Orange using it really to commercialize,
exactly,
which is wrong.
So you're paying for that, what is supposed to be some sort of free software that you can install in any phone. You actually have to pay for it. I think that's disgusting.
Yeah,
that's such a missed opportunity for Orange. They could say, you get the latest Android, join us, you'll get the latest Android as soon as it's released.
Exactly. Well, that's how I was informed on the outlet, so I had to completely confirm it on the website. But there's no information on the website. That's the worst thing. There's not so much information on the website. So I discovered I can get Ice Cream Sandwich on my phone until I finish my contract.
And that's something Apple got right in absolute, because they got such a position of leverage by making sure that they were the ones responsible for pushing the upgrades to their phones, because they knew what the telephone companies are like.
Yeah, I think that's...
Because this is what would happen.
Mm. There you go. Also, I rediscovered Bill Hicks, the American poet and stand-up comedian. I think back in the 80s and the early 90s, I completely missed the point.
Yeah.
I didn't have anything in common with his views on politics and so on and so on. But recently, because of all the events in Mexico and all that, I sort of connect now with what he had to say back then.
I think it's absolutely fantastic. The Bill Hicks story.
No.
It's really good.
I'll have to check it out. Another discovery. Thank you very much. Muchas gracias. And adios.
Andrew?
Yes. Yes, I have a discovery. I tried Razer QT this morning. It's one of the breed of desktops that are being created to cater for disgruntled users of old desktops. For example, if you don't like KDE 4, then Razer QT might be for you, because it has the same sort of funky widget set and everything's blue and looks nice. But it doesn't try to force you into not saving stuff on your desktop, for example, and it doesn't require all sorts of configuration to work. But when I tried to choose it in my login manager after I'd installed it, it asked me if I wanted
Razor QT, Razor QT with Metacity, or Razor QT with K-Win.
Yeah.
So even at that very initial stage of saying this is what I want to use, it's offering me choices.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure whether that's good or bad. I kind of want them to just make a sensible decision as to what works best and what looks best and go with it. I don't want to have to choose every single aspect of the desktop. That's what I expect them to do.
You're right. It's an historic thing because it's not a window manager. So you need a window manager to go with it. But then you have to explain what a window manager is, which is confusing. They should just go for K-Win. I mean,
yeah.
What are the differences between Metacity and K-Win at that level? I don't know.
I don't know. Let's do a roundup. I know nothing. Let's do a roundup. Let's look into these new wave of desktop window type things. Maybe for issue 165.
That sounds like a brilliant idea.
Yeah, let's do that. That's great. Great stuff.
That leaves Ben.
I've discovered two things this fortnight. I've discovered F-Droid, which is like Android Marketplace or Google Play, whatever it's called now, but it only contains free software.
Excellent.
That's fantastic.
Excellent.
So I assume it's only available for Android, given the name.
it wouldn't be allowed anywhere else.
Yeah. You have to enable, what do you call it, side loading, whatever, where you can load whatever apps you want. But as long as you've got that on your phone, you can just install this.
That's why Android is good.
Yeah, it is. And get rid of all the crud from the Play Store and just have free software on your phone. Awesome. The second thing I've discovered this week, and I'm a bit late in picking this up really, but Control R in Bash. When I really started using the shell, I was using Seesh on Solaris and History, and that was a nightmare to use. So I never really bothered that much, and sort of I followed over to Bash, whatever. But yeah, I've just discovered, when I'm using the shell, hit Control R, type the start of my command, fills in the rest of it. Provided it's one of the commands I've typed before. Makes it so much quicker. I don't know how I ever got by without it.
Yeah, brilliant. Brilliant discoveries. Thanks, guys.
It's time for a halfway...
Hold on, let me turn the charisma down.
Well, it's time for a halfway reminder. Still to come. Still to come, we've got rants and raves, speak your brains, the open ballot, and possibly one last thing.
That leaves rants and raves.
Rants and raves.
Who's got... Right, I've got a rant, because I'm angry.
Okay, cool.
Who's got a rave?
Do you want me to set the timer?
Yes. That means someone's got a minute to think of a rant. Of a rave, sorry.
Okay.
Have you been upgraded to Ice Cream Sandwich on your Android phone?
No, you can see my Android phone in the Linus Torvalds interview. Okay, ready to go? Go.
K-Snapshot. What's it all about, eh? You press the print screen button and you expect it to print the screen, to take a screenshot. Instead, it brings up a dialogue with take a new snapshot, help, send to, copy, save as. You click save as and it sends you to a dialogue where you can rename the thing that you've taken, and then you save it as whatever, screenshot one. And then you press OK on that, and it takes you back to the same dialogue with no, OK, that's done, your screenshot has been taken. So I end up taking the same screenshot two or three times just to make sure that KDE's done it for me. And if you click on take a new snapshot, it gives you a cursor thing, like a crosshair, which makes you think that you can draw a marquee over an area, and it will just select that area for the screenshot, but it doesn't. All it does is take a screenshot of the entire screen. It's useless. It's a useless feature. KDE, stop giving me useless features that I don't want. Also, Ben, you're wearing the same shirt as me. It's terribly embarrassing.
I didn't even notice.
I didn't. I thought you were playing the same band.
Okay, I've thought of a rave. Shall I go for it?
Yeah.
Okay, I want to rave about the very best image snapshot utility that you can get for any Linux desktop. This is a little-known utility called K-Snapshot. What's great about K-Snapshot is that it has a single unified interface and provides all the features you could possibly need. One of the things I use all the time is the timer facility, where you can set a delay. You can say, take a screenshot in 3 or 5 seconds, which is perfect for full-screen stuff that you can't use with any other screenshot utility. Unlike Andrew, I can always use the marquee selection tool to select an area of the screen. You have to select the area and then press return. that actually crops the image and allows you to save it. But my very favourite feature of Case Snapshot is the way that it intelligently names screenshot files, because it automatically appends a two-digit number to the end of each file name. So you can carry on taking screenshots on and on and on and on, which is what we all do here in the office, and they're all intelligently named, and I think it's the best tool I've ever used.
Can I ask a question? Who developed that?
I don't know.
The Unknown Soldier.
The Unknown Soldier.
Speak your brains. Right.
Oh, Graham, was that you rustling papers over there?
Yeah, sorry. I did print them out, but we're kind of running short of time. Many thanks to John Wycliffe, who sent two Speak Your Brains for this podcast. We didn't have any more, so many thanks to him, because without him we wouldn't have this section. So his first is, since Nokia bought Qt, the libraries have been really messed up. All the apps I've written have to be rewritten. They have to be buried. They have buried the access to the modules under the new methods. Why did they change the imports? It worked fine till Nokia bought Qt. Lots of people think the opposite, but it's good of him to say it. Also, Linux versus BSD. The reason I've not used BSD is because it was, until PCBSD, too difficult to install. When I installed FreeBSD, I had to install it on a separate hard drive because of the file system. It was too different in partitioning the drive. It was incompatible with Linux partitioning. At least I could not find the instructions on how to put a BSD partition on the same drive as the Linux partition. Installing PCBSD was different. It installed in an easy manner. The GUI is the reason Linux has grown with the less technical people. The learning curve is too high in BSD compared to Linux. That's what he wanted to say, so we've said it for him.
Yay. Open ballots now. This comes back to what Ben was talking about earlier, about the choice that courts in America are about to get as of, is it next month?
Yeah.
About whether complicated technical patentee trials should be heard by either a lay jury or by a technical jury. And we asked, is this a good thing? Do we need more technical people on juries that decide this sort of thing? There were a few trends identifiable on this in the responses that we got from you lovely people. The first one is, yes, we need more technical people on juries. Second one was, no, that would be a bad idea. And the third one, the one that everyone can really agree on, is that it shouldn't really get to that stage in the first place. The patent office should do its job properly. So let's kick off with that one, because that's where most people agree. Bruno says, this is utter HS. He says, this should not even have come to court. So many of these patents are obvious and trivial. Patent officers worldwide need to be challenged for granting these patents, as they seem to be asleep at the wheel. The whole premise of patenting software needs to be challenged in the US and anywhere else it occurs. Blah, blah. Just generally solid gold stuff. Completely agree with you there. Jokey Rhyme says, the system is broken long before it gets to lay juries. There have been a few articles in the last month on Grok Law about how the rest of the system doesn't need to change at all, provided patents are properly tested at the patent office. Noobs says, the patent office should be able to kick out patent applications for anything as generic as a rounded rectangle.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's where the problem is.
It's silly, isn't it?
Yeah. I really do not understand where the common sense has gone in these decisions. I don't understand why. I mean, there's even more lunacy than rounded rectangles. You know, we've talked about it in the past, XOR being used on when Microsoft reverses the cursor color on its Windows backdrop. They've got a patent for that. And there's lots of other stuff. I mean, XOR, you can't get any more primitive than that. Yes, sorry.
What are they doing then, patent officers?
I might have said it before, but in this context, it reminds... I think my personal answer is no, that you shouldn't have technical people on juries. I think Richard Feynman, the famous physicist, said that... if you can't explain your discovery to the layman, then you haven't made a discovery. And I think the same should be true of patents and law in general. You know, ordinary people need to be able to understand. And I suppose that's the lawyer's job. So it sounds like the Samsung lawyers have done a pretty bad job in this. Mm. Or the jury have made mistakes.
That leads us fairly logically onto the no technical jurors are a bad idea thread.
Jokey Ryan, who we mentioned earlier, says, I think the jury probably should be a cross-section with all sorts of people in there. There's an Einstein quote going around that is something like, if you can't explain something in simple enough terms, then you don't understand it enough. Which is...
Yeah. Maybe I got the whoever said it wrong.
Well, it doesn't matter who said it. It was all sensible. Dunonymous Penguin says, absolutely not technical jurors. Despite the initial appearance that the Apple-Samsung case has gone badly wrong and been decided without due regard for prior art, under the influence of a patent-holding foreman, justice must be done and be seen to be done. The thought of justice being served by technical experts is almost equal to a secret trial.
And how can the jury foreman have so much influence on the rest of the jury? Is that right?
No, basically. No, right. It's not right.
And as it's been exposed that he has had so much influence on the rest of the jury, shouldn't it kind of be thrown out?
There's actually quite an interesting post on Grocklaw. I think it was, in fact, it was a comment to a post, I think, put up today, where it contains a list of previous cases in the US where this sort of thing's happened. One was a case of a policeman was on a jury in a parking ticket thing, and the policeman explained to the other jurors how the procedure for parking ticket. But basically what he then becomes is a witness.
Yes.
That isn't cross-examined, he isn't under oath, he isn't, all these sort of basic principles of law aren't adhered to. And this has happened several times in various cases, and they have, the results have been slightly different, whether it's been mistrials or jury misconduct, etc., but they can be thrown out.
Right.
Yeah. That makes an awful lot of sense. Steve from York says, law is complicated. What about criminal trials with complex forensic arguments? We don't expect a jury in that situation to have prior understanding of forensic techniques. If we did, the jury pool would be very small. It's the job of the lawyers with their expert witnesses to present an argument that any juror can make a decision on. Yes, Samsung's lawyers seem to have dropped the ball there. Effie, what do you reckon?
Well, I think you're right. There shouldn't be any technical members on the jury, just because of the big influence that they cause within a group. But it's also, it's just the lack of common sense for the rest of the members of the jury. You are an expert, then please explain to us all this, and then we just follow. It's almost a stupid kind of approach from the rest of the members of the jury.
I think it's exactly as Ben said with the policeman. They're no longer a group of peers.
Yeah.
You know, because with his experience, I could imagine how difficult it is to actually propose some kind of different opinion with somebody who is an expert, maybe, but it's not. It's going to have such an influence over the final result.
Yeah, and like I said, in that case, he couldn't be cross-examined by the alternate.
Yes. No one can say, actually, you're wrong on that point.
Yeah, Samsung's lawyer couldn't stand up and challenge him. But also, the question wasn't just about juries, it was about judges and... as well, and whether or not the judge should have technical experience, because it did happen in the Google Oracle case that the judge himself challenged lawyers on the technical things they were putting across, and in a lot of cases it turned out the lawyers hadn't properly understood the technical arguments they were making, and the judge was able to say to him, look, shut up, you're talking rubbish, that's not the case, you know, go back to your technical team, work out what's going on and come back.
Well, that's much rarer, isn't it? Because what he does, he proposes a better scenario for the juries to make a decision, to understand and make a decision.
Yeah.
So I think in that sort of case is actually really good.
That should be the job of the judge, really, shouldn't it?
We shouldn't, but then again, he does have the authority to make decisions on the spot, doesn't it? And if it's just a regular legal case, He will do the same. He will call the lawyers and have meetings with them and explain, well, you're basically messing this up. Go and rethink your case, that sort of thing. So I think that's a completely different scenario. I think that is more appropriate. That's what I'm saying.
Well, there is a case for to have more technical people on the jury. Phelan Whiteley says starts his post by saying that peers equals one equal to another in ability and qualification. Taking that definition of the term, it would make sense to have someone who actually understood the goings-on. Back when it meant someone who was of equal footing, i.e. a common person, it was fine. We all know what murder is. We all know if you break into a house, it is wrong. You should have to be qualified in a case like this, much like in a financial case. They have to get special lawyers and investigators. We can't expect justice to be served if people base their judgments on what feels right. Neil Munro says, yes, of course. If the jury doesn't understand or isn't informed enough to make a reasonable and logical judgment about the case, can they really be called peers? And Pulsating Quasar says, that was actually a patent comment that I've cut and pasted into the wrong area of the file. So ignore that. Anonymous Samsung Penguin says, I think if the jury in Apple versus Samsung case were technical people, we would have had a different turnout. Spiegel 66 says, yes. Technical experience, judges with technical experience would better understand the cases. This really is a specialist field.
So it sounds like most people have said yes.
Sounds like most people have said yes, but really everyone has said yes to the patent office just really getting their act together.
Yeah, yeah.
And quite a few people have said that the judge needs to exert more technical influence, show more technical ability. But I think really the best thing to do is to put your Samsung phone in the village pond, and if it sinks, it's okay. And if it floats, it's infringed Apple's patents, and you should burn it.
That's brilliant. Oh, I meant to turn the charisma down again. Right, and with that, it's the end of episode 16 of the Tux Radar podcast. Thank you all for listening. Thanks for sticking with us through those difficult times 2 weeks ago. And we'll see you all again in 2 weeks' time.
Can I take this opportunity to congratulate you for your effort, for your hard work?
Thanks, Effie.
And your time doing this free podcast.
Thanks. And thanks for not sullying my ears with any of your more of your nonsense about the end wives.
Yeah.
I find that really annoying.
And I would try now on stop from happening.
Now I've got to cut it.